So, this is Vibe Drive episode 136. And one of my good friends, one of the most smooth fellas in the tech space, is coming back to the podcast tonight. He's here, so let's go. Vibe Drive starts now. What's up, people? This your boy Viper, the man about tech, and welcome back to another episode of Vibe Drive. This is the podcast about tech, hosted by the man about tech. And tonight, I have one of the single greatest tech content creators of all time joining me on the podcast. He just hit a momentous milestone on the YouTube. Now, instead of calling him Mr. Mobile, we could call him Mr. 1 Million. So let's bring in my man, one of the most smooth voices in tech today, Mr. Mobile, a.k.a. Michael Fisher. And back, what's up, bro? How you doing?
Viper, I'm doing very well. I am much more amped up than I was before that lead-in. So thank you once again for setting a bar that is impossible for me to meet. Hi. It's great to see your face again.
Oh, whatever. Good to you too, man. Hey, thank you for taking the time, man. I appreciate you.
Thank you for rescheduling yourself, my friend. I'm sorry to have kept you waiting, and same to your viewers. It's been quite a month, as you already know, and I hope I come through okay. I'm on cellular, as I've told you. I'm on a mobile device, as I've told you. I'm in the country, as I've told you. So I may disappear at any time, because what even happens outside of cities? Who knows?
Well, hopefully that does not happen. Your audio good, your visual good. We are good to go.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Absolutely. So the first thing I got to start off with you tonight is I got to thank you. Like I said in the introduction, you recently just hit 1 million subscribers on YouTube.
Yes, sir.
And part of the your celebrating that, you made a special video involving a giveaway. Now, I was not expecting it, but in your 1 million subscriber video, you actually gave me a shout out and you gave other creators a shout out too. But I want to thank you for giving me a shout out, because I always have creators on my channel and things like that, but rarely do I ever get shout outs out from their actual channels and things like that. So when you got 1 million subscriber YouTube channel giving you a shout out, it's kind of cool. I was wondering that day why I was getting all these strange comments that I usually don't get on my channel. And then somebody said, did you see Michael Fisher's video? You were in. I'm like, wait, what? So I go watch the video and I go, this explains the comments I'm getting in my video. But so thank you, man. I appreciate you.
Absolutely, man. It is one of the few things that is just 100% fun and awesome, is to be able to occasionally inject some positivity into what can be a stressful or negative space. So anytime that there's a cool event, a couple of years ago, we did something similar where it was just like big giveaway and say something nice. That was the way you would enter. You would say something nice on a YouTube video and screenshot it and send it to us. Then you have an entry. And it was the same thing. People were emailing me and saying, hey, I didn't know why I was getting all these positive YouTube comments all of a sudden, and it was because of this. So even if it's just a flash in the pan, even if it's just for a week, I wanted to say, look, I've spent 4 years trying to get to 1 million. It was a number that was really important to me. It doesn't have to be important to everybody. It was just important to me. And I got tired of hearing, hey, you should be at 1 million already. You're doing great work. And I'm like, there's a lot of other people out there doing really, really great work, and you don't know their names. So help amplify that. I hope it helped a little bit. I think it was just nice for the week or two to have that positivity blast. So thanks for making great stuff.
Hey, thank you for the recognition, man. I've been only doing it for a couple of years now, but I've been watching you for a very long time. So it was kind of cool for me to get that kind of a recognition from you, because you have been doing it for a while. I've been watching you for years. Hell, I remember all the way back in the Captain Two Phone days, man. So I know,
right? Stay tuned. We might bring that captain back at some point. You watch out. Hold on. He's not dead. He's just in retirement. He's just on a tropical island. Filled with pina coladas, painkillers, and other such mind-altering drinks. Wonderful.
Absolutely. Woo. I love the current that we have in this podcast tonight. We are joined by Cricket tonight. I don't know if they have names or not, but we are joined by Cricket in the mic in the background.
It's all so this is I am in my hometown where I grew up, because we're shooting some LG Wing content. I don't know if we'll talk about that tonight, but we're shooting a lot of that. I'm out here with David Kogan. David Immel just went back home. We've just been shooting all kinds of video with the LG Wing and the Galaxy Fold 2, which is providing this stream tonight. And the crickets are unavoidable in my hometown with population, 13. So we thank them for joining us. I hopefully won't make any jokes that are bad enough to warrant their presence.
So we don't have a lot of time tonight. I know you don't have a lot of time, but we got to talk.
Fault. I'm sorry.
It's all good. We got to talk about foldables because that was what we agreed to come in and talk about tonight. So sure. It's ironic that you are filming on your Fold 2. For those of y'all that are not that you're listening on audio, Michael is on his Fold 2 camera. So I think he's using the camera and the audio from the Fold 2 right now to come on his podcast. I am holding my Fold 2 in my hand. And as most of them know, I have nicknamed this Fold 2 Bruce Wayne. And I am in absolute love, Michael. I remember last year, people like you and Sojourner Beth and Mac Weinbach and Marquez, you all would not shut up about the original Fold. I was like, damn. I made a pack with myself. Like, you know what? This year I'm gonna get my hands on the Fold 2 just so I can see what all the hype is about. And oh my God, I understand.
You get it now, right? It's one of the things you have to experience, like the roller coaster that's in your nearby city's most vicious theme park. And people are like, you just have to ride it. You have to ride it to understand what it's like. I can't describe it to you. That's what it is.
This is amazing technology. This is definitely my favorite device I purchased all year long. Just the mere fact that you have a smartphone in 1 minute and then you open it up to a full mini tablet the next minute. This is next level. Like,
it is.
And especially the refinement they made from the version 1 to version 2, Michael. Wow.
Yes. Now, I don't want to jump right to Wing, but just in context, I'm carrying the Fold. I'm carrying the Wing. I'm also carrying the Razor around because I've decided that I want to use it as often as possible to see how that hinge holds up over time. But we were showing them around last night as we met some. We were lucky enough to make friends with some folks who work in the restaurant industry out here. Who were lovely people, and we were showing them our phones, and they were like, they looked at the Wing, they had some nice things to say about it initially, but pretty quickly they were like, I can only see this being useful in one or two ways. And then we showed them the Fold 2, and the tune changed pretty rapidly. They're like, oh, I understand that. Like, yeah, you want a big screen. When you want a big screen, you want a small screen. I mean, it's still big, it's still heavy, it's still expensive, whatever. But the appeal is instantly apparent once you show somebody. It's like, oh yeah, you can have like what's essentially an iPad mini that goes in your pocket when you don't want it to be deployed. Come on. I mean, how can you go wrong with it? I have literally this script written. I'm ready to go. I just need to shoot it. And we've been shooting it today. So I'm excited.
It's funny that you mentioned the iPad mini because I find that a lot of the time lately, the Fold 2 have been replacing my things that I would normally use my iPad Pro for. I don't really need to use the iPad Pro for anymore because I'm doing the Fold 2. Basically for media consumption, viewing YouTube analytics and things like that. I used to do all that stuff on my iPad because I wanted that bigger screen. But now with this in my hand, pretty much constantly, I don't really need the iPad as much anymore because I'm using this a lot more.
So fun fact, we took this trip and I was thinking it was going to be one overnight. I didn't pack my laptop. I didn't think I'd need it. We extended for 2 days on account of making decisions at 1 a.m. after some drinking, which I don't recommend, by the way. But, you know, we did it. And I'm like, I don't have a laptop and I need a laptop to do a lot of work today. I was using the Fold as a stand-in. Is it as good as a laptop? No, it's much smaller. But I was able to comfortably get most of the work done I needed to get done as a result of having that giant screen. I could have done it on a Note 20. Yeah, it's a pretty big device, but it's a totally different class when you have 7.6 inches of essentially square viewing area, isn't it?
I mean, just watching YouTube on this thing, like when I have it open, like, you can obviously on a regular smartphone like an iPhone or a Galaxy Note 20, you can watch YouTube and comment on the video, but it's a completely different experience watching a YouTube video and trying to make a comment at the same time on the Fold 2 when it's opened up. It's like mind blowing. It's world changing, dude.
It really is. And it's funny, you know, I mean, I think I can hear the people out there who don't have it or don't want it or, you know, saying like, you guys are just going crazy over what's essentially just a big screen. Just go get, and you can buy a regular phone and a tablet and then still have $1,000 left over for a laptop. Like, it's still not a thing that I think most people can justify, particularly now. But it's a very compelling window into a future that I think will be almost entirely foldable within 5 years as the prices come down, which they, of course, will.
Absolutely. And not to mention, like I said earlier, I know you guys listening on audio can't appreciate this, but Michael is actually doing this stream on his Fold 2. He looks amazing. He sounds amazing. So not only do you have like a mini tablet and things like that, you got a kind of like a mini mobile studio with the Fold 2 on the go that can fit in your pocket. You can edit, you can shoot, record, edit videos all on your Fold 2, and the content and the quality of it is just magnificent.
It is, and yeah, I've got it plugged into a battery pack right now because it's power intensive to do the stream over LTE. But it is funny. I'll try and send you a photo of it because it's actually folded in half right now. It's in kind of mini laptop mode, sitting on a tripod. So I can only see half of your face and half of mine. But I trust we look normal on non-folded screens. But it's just super handy, man.
It really is. Shout out to Anthony Belcher for the super chat. He said that Michael Fisher have the iPhone 12 early. I don't think Michael has an iPhone 12 early.
He does not. No, Apple and I do not have a PR relationship. So I buy them retail and I review them a little bit later. So it's just the way it is. You know how it goes.
No doubt. Shout out to those of y'all listening on audio only this week. Thank you for listening to another episode of Vibe Job with me and my man, Michael Fisher. Appreciate you guys tuning in each and every week to the podcast. If you guys want to check out Michael Fisher's content, and you should, his channel will be in the show notes. Definitely go on there, check him out. He is legit. Also, if you want to donate or support the podcast, there should be a Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes as well. Again, not required, but anything you're willing to contribute, greatly, greatly appreciate it. If you happen to be listening to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, though, please consider leaving a rating or review as to help more people discover the show, help us get back into the top 200, which is what we're trying to do. So, once again, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving that rating or review. And thank you for listening to another episode of Vibe Drive. So, honeymoon phase. Go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm just retweeting your tweet right now because I forgot to do that because I rushed into this thing deeply underprepared and wildly off schedule. So I'm sorry. I'm retweeting now. Hopefully there'll be a couple more people who will come join us. Please continue.
I appreciate you. So I, like I said, Michael, I am still in love with my Fold 2. Like, the honeymoon phase is kind of over, but I'm still using my Fold 2 more than I have any other devices that I have. I got an iPhone 11 Pro Max right now. I got the Pixel 5. I got a Fold 2. Got an iPhone SE 2020 around here somewhere. But this is the device that I'm using prime time right now because this is my favorite device. Like, just the versatility. It's just so amazing.
Now, does the weight bother you? Because there's heft to it, right? Like, I'll switch back to my Razer. I'll switch back to my Z Flip. I'm like, yeah, it is nice not to be carrying around what feels like a gold brick because it's big and heavy, isn't it?
It is, but it doesn't really bother me that much. What bothers me more, Michael, is when I'm holding it, when it's open, trying to hold it with one hand, or I'm like trying to watch it and like hold content. It's kind of weird the way you have to hold it like one-handed, so it kind of cramps your finger sometimes. But other than that,
because they made it wider, didn't they? You know, right. I mean, they reduced the radius on the corners. They made the canvas bigger, but the device is also wider. So yeah, you're holding it out, and it really is a
wide boy. The wide boy, but I love it. So
you close it back up and you don't have to deal with the things we had to deal with on Fold 1, which was a tiny afterthought of an outside display. You know, this thing is a fully fledged phone when it's closed. And that's something we were all asking for from day one. So I'm glad that it only took them one generation to do it.
Absolutely. So I want to ask you a question that you will have more knowledge of than me. You have or had the original Fold, and you also now have the Fold 2. So talk about some of the differences that you've noticed between the first generation and now the new one.
Yeah, we got that cover display pretty much covered. You know, that's what everyone complained about, and they corrected it. There is a degree of weirdness that I miss from Fold 1. Fold 2, you take it out of your pocket, and people kind of, I don't want to say that people know what it is, but you turn it on, that display is so huge on the outside, it kind of looks like a normal phone, almost, if you don't catch the sides, if you don't see the depth. With Fold 1, you turn on that screen on the outside, it's this long, narrow diving board of a screen and this very narrow casing, kind of odd, like an old LG. It wasn't the Prada, but one of their really, really slimline designs. And you're like, this is not a, is that a phone? I would get that all the time. Is that a phone? You know, paying for my coffee on Google Pay. I get that with Fold 2 to a degree, but not quite so much because it is wider. So I miss this sort of anomalous nature of Fold 1. I am happy to say that you can still use it one-handed very comfortably while it's closed. That's something a lot of people were worried about when they saw that Samsung was widening it. We have a much improved camera suite. It's still about a generation behind the Note 20 Ultra, but
right,
it's not the cartoonish color processing of that first Fold, which was kind of these leftovers of this day where Samsung cameras couldn't really be taken too seriously. And you know, now it's again, I would prefer, if I have to choose a Samsung camera, I'm going to pick the Note 20 Ultra every time, but I can carry the Fold 2 and no other device. And if I need to take some B-roll or I need to shoot some stills for Instagram, and as I often do, I don't immediately miss my iPhone 11 Pro or my Pixel. I do miss them to a degree, but you know, not, it's certainly more than serviceable, which is what you need on a $2,000 phone, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You used the perfect word, it's definitely serviceable. Obviously, it's not as good as the camera system that we have on the Note 20, but if you need to take a picture in a quick pinch, the Fold 2 will be more than suffice your need for a camera. It's excellent. Take pretty damn good pictures, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, this is also, even though it's not the Note 20 Ultra's camera, it benefits from a similar truth. We were shooting with the Pixel 5, which, you know, I gave it a pretty positive review. It's a pretty, pretty great device. But yep. Google is still doing all those tricks that it's doing in the camera with software, because that's the whole point of the Pixel camera line. But and you take that night sight and portrait mode together, you put it up against a Note 20 Ultra, even a Fold 2 with that much bigger sensor, and it's able to bring in more light and lend more natural depth, which I owe David Amell great credit for pointing this out to me at Android Authority. It's really no contest. You cannot fake in software what the Fold 2 and Note 20 Ultra can do in hardware. So while this camera is not a huge selling point for it, it's also not at all a detractor. And that's, again, when you're paying $2,000 for a phone, you can't afford that kind of compromise. You just can't. And I'm glad that they did.
Yeah, a lot of people like to point to the camera system on the Fold 2 as a weak point, because it's not what the Note 20 is offering, but it is definitely not a weak point at all. The camera system is excellent.
And to be fair, I get their point, because again, when you're shelling out this much, you expect the best of everything. But I think you need to keep in mind that what you are paying for is that folding screen, and more broadly, the possibilities that are enabled by that folding screen. You're not paying for like, oh, okay, this is the biggest bucket there is, and it's full to the top with everything. It's not that. You're paying for a very specific set of use cases.
Definitely. So 2020 has been kind of the introduction of the not so normal form factors in phones. So I want to talk about another phone that you have. I don't know if you still have it, but you definitely did a review on the Surface Duo. Now, I don't have it, so I don't have any experience with it, but a lot of tech reviewers, they've had very differing opinions about the Surface Duo. Some people are like, okay, it's decent. It could be better, but I know what Microsoft is doing. And then some people are like, what the hell is this? Why did they even do this? So, Michael, where do you stand with the Surface Duo?
The Surface Duo, I think that those reviews would have been entirely different and substantially more positive if the Duo had launched when I think it probably was planned to launch, which was like nowish, or, you know, in November, because it launched and it was undercooked. The problem isn't with the concept. Microsoft has an incredible concept there. I mean, I'm a foldable fan. I prefer an uninterrupted canvas that I can fold in half. But there is something there when you're talking about a hinge and two displays. There is absolutely something there when you're talking about the use case that fits that form factor. And you're like one thing on here and a different thing on here, or one big thing. And then you've got a column of emails and then, or your calendar here and your emails here. Like there's so much potential in that form factor. And when you hold it, especially if I know you don't have one, but you haven't held one either.
No, I have not.
Let me tell you, it's the opposite of the Fold 2. You pick up the Fold 2 and you're like, man, I got to start lifting more weights, right? The Surface Duo, you pick it up and you're like, this is paper. This is the tablet from Her. This is something weird from Westworld. Nothing should be able to be this thin and this beautiful and still be this useful. And then get weirdly great battery life too. They got so much right on the hardware, and they're in the process of fixing all the software. But the way it launched, I can't remember a more clear example of a company shooting itself in the foot on a launch. It's sad. Because it's not that a bunch of us, I think we're misinterpreted as reviewers often by the super fans who are like, they just don't understand. It's a whole new paradigm and they just don't know how to use it, so they bash it. Dude, I've been loving nothing but weird mobile phones all year long. That's the only thing that has kept me enthusiastic in this sea of slabs. I don't want another slab and I don't want the Duo to fail. But when a product launches and it feels like an alpha that you're paying $1,300 for, that's not, or $1,400, it's not tenable. That's ridiculous. Fortunately, look, I'm so excited to get back to it. It's been too busy. It's October. You know how it is.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm just stoked to get back into the Duo, because with the update that it's gotten, there's one launch day update that we had early. So we reviewed based on that. And there's been one major platform update since. And that has corrected many of the complaints we had, but there's so many complaints that there need to be like two more platform updates, I think, before it like gets to the point where they wanted it to be, frankly. But I can't wait to get back to it. I love the thing. I love the idea of the thing. It's please go watch my video. This is the only time I'll say that in this podcast, because it's too much for me to say. I'll just keep on rambling. And really, I did that for 10 minutes already. It's in the video. Please go watch that review. It's a wonderful device, and I hope it succeeds. And we know a sequel's coming, and that's great, because it will, that will succeed, I think.
Yeah, it's like I watched your video, and it's like you said in the video, you know, it went kind of rushed. They probably should have released it at a later time than what they did. But at least now with the phone being out there in the wild, you got all these different people that can offer their opinion, criticism, feedback of the device. And then Microsoft sure. can take all that data and may put that into what they do with the R&D for second generation. And then we can get something like we have with the Fold 2, which is a monumental leap in bounds over Gen 1. And then maybe Surface Duo 2 is something that's just next level that it can't be ignored anymore.
Yeah, there was a moment where I was wondering if Microsoft was really realizing how broken it was, because we had to, you know, it's common knowledge that there was a lot of communication during the review period between us and Microsoft. And it was like, you guys, if you launch this way, you don't want to launch this in this state. And they were able to get us that update early. And I'm really pleased about that. So I wondered for a second whether Microsoft was really aware of how wrong it was going to go. But then I had a great call with a bunch of engineers, and they were like, yep, we know exactly the bug you're talking about. That's addressed in two builds down the road, or that's addressed in the next build, or like, oh, actually, we haven't seen that one before. That might be your thing. And I'm like, maybe we'll see. So I don't need to tell anybody that Microsoft is full of very smart people. I don't need to tell anybody that no corporation is out to launch a product that fails. But people do need to be reminded that Microsoft launched the first Surface and it did poorly. But the Surface has since grown into a monumental computing brand. It's not perfect, but it's important. And I mean, I don't see them botching the Duo in the long run. So I'm excited for it.
Okay, so in your Duo video, you said something that is very, very, I want to highlight right now. In your Duo video, you said that you are not rooting for the Duo to fail. And I think a lot of us, especially tech reviewers, need to be mindful of that. It is okay to be critical of a product, but not be overly negative. If you can offer constructive criticism to the brands and the engineers about how they can go about making the product better, I think that is one for all involved, because that means we get a better product in the long run. Even if it comes to Gen 2 or Gen 3, at least they have that criticism to work with as they go back to the lab and make it better. But just overtly bashing product, just to be overtly bashing and being negative, doesn't do anybody any good. And it pretty much gets you tuned out and ignored, because that's not stuff that the brand can work with. They can't work with your negativity. They can work with your constructive feedback, but your negativity is just not wanted. So we need to calm down a little bit when we are talking about these products.
Yeah. And I'm less worried about what the brands think. You know, it's like, what's the worst thing that happens? Like, they get mad that we don't give them positive coverage, so they don't seed us devices early and whatever. I mean, that's fine. You go buy it and then you review it anyway. But it's like, I'm more worried about customers going out there and dropping a lot of money. Like, if I tell you a Moto G is great and it's not, and you lose $250, it's not a great day for you, but it's not a Duo. It's not $1,400 or whatever it launched at. It was $1,399, right? Or $1,299. You know, that's a lot of money. That's a ton of money right now. And you can, you know, like, you should know, you should be as informed as possible going into the store to buy the thing. And that is the role that I continue to try to maintain, even as this year has been more for me about, well, you know, I'm not just going to cover devices because I've covered them in the past, or because I think people should be informed, because they should. I got to cover things that I'm interested in. No. And if nothing else, the Duo I've been interested in since I heard about the Courier, man, 2011, 2009. I don't even remember it, man. So we've been waiting for this device forever. Daniel Rubino, also, I got to give him a shout out. Go watch Windows Central's review and continuing coverage, because he's been waiting for that device since I was, you know, four. He's not that much older than I am, but
But you bring up a good point. And I'm not really talking about trying to appease the brands and for viewers. I'm just talking about being overtly negative towards the product just because you don't like it. I mean, that doesn't really help anybody. I mean, if, like I said, if you want to be critical of a product, that's fine. But make sure your criticism can be used by whoever needs to hear it or whatever to make the product better, while at the same time still informing your viewers that if you want to consider the product, fine, but just know that such and such is not good and it could be better.
So, yeah, that's evergreen advice.
Definitely. All right, so I think you've been kind of anxious to get to this next topic, so let's talk about it. Continuing on with weird phones in 2020, we got to talk about the LG Wing. Now, I like the LG Wing. I like the concept. I like what they're doing with the device. What I don't like, Michael, is I feel like it's overpriced. I mean, when you talk about $999, you're traveling in Apple and Samsung waters, and I don't know if LG wants to be in those type of water. But other than the pricing, I think it's a solid device. I think it's especially for like a first gen device, especially with the quibble and the T thing. I think they're doing big things right there.
They are. And anytime you have a really experimental device like that, you have to take into account, I think, the R&D cost, right? It's like, this is a phone that goes from a rather thin and not terribly heavy standard looking smartphone into like a weird Thunderbird thing, or a crucifix. And it does that with hardware that is, to my eye and to my hand, like very refined. It feels great. It sounds great. It sounds like an old Sidekick. And I mean the good ones, not the later crappy ones. And it's reliable and it's innovative and it's fast. And the stuff they're doing on the camera, which we may talk about in a second, is it's incredible from a thought perspective, maybe not from an execution perspective yet. I haven't looked at a lot of the footage from it yet. But when you have all of those capabilities bundled in the same device, there's so much cost that goes into developing it. I'm surprised it's not more expensive. I heard $999 and I was like, oh, well, that's actually okay. Well, coming in under $1,000 or at $1,000, I was expecting $1,300 again or $1,500. So I think LG knows that the people who are going to be cross shopping this with other $999 phones are not going to, it's not a phone that most people would consider because it's not for most people. It's LG getting to explore with their Explorer program and try something. I was going to say new, but it's not new. Try something again. In the because it's based on the form factor of the LG VX 9400 from back in the Verizon days in 2008, I want to say. But try something again in a different way, and I would be surprised if they thought they were going to sell in any kind of volume, because they're not. It's an Explorer device. It's pushing the boundaries. But for the people who want something different, and particularly for vloggers, I think it's a compelling pitch. That's as kind as I'm willing to be to it, because there are a lot of drawbacks.
Yeah, especially with the fact that it has a built-in gimbal in the camp with the phone hardware itself. So that's pretty cool.
That's another thing I'm going to reach out to them to clarify. There are so many questions I have about that system, because when you flip it open and you fire up the camera, no other phone can do what it can do. How it's achieving that based on crop or hardware or anything, like all that remains to be seen for me from a just a first person usage perspective. I know it's been reported on already, but man, that interface, having that ability to hold a phone like this, get a widescreen view and steer a camera like with a toggle, like a gimbal is wild. And it's wild to use. And it's crazy to put the lock button on and just move the phone around and have it not have the subject stay there. Like they're doing incredibly cool things in that very narrow category. So it excites me. It probably excites you. I don't know.
But when that phone came out, I thought to myself, oh, Michael Fisher can have a big time with this one.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's kind of a bummer, though, because I can't do any episodes of When Phones Were Fun right now talking about old phones, because phones are fun again. So I'm like, come on, go back to the boring stuff so I can talk about the past again. Or I'm going to have to rename the series.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I think a lot of brands are trying to explore a new frontier, because I think a lot of people feel like you do that. They're getting tired of the old tried and true slab, and they want something different.
God, who? Like, people get in my comments, they argue when I do a slab video, and I'm a video on a slab smartphone, and I'm like, who could care? I was so into them until they all became just different colored variations of the same thing. Or OnePlus, just cranking out, used to be just this pioneer, and it's just cranking out these things. I'm like, yep, that's a predictable evolution of the last thing. Okay, I'm so glad I have foldables and like things like the Wing now and the Razor, because, Dull.
Too funny. Yeah.
I don't mean to be glib about it. I know they're important things. They're products that people work hard on. It's just, an immature product category. It's like reviewing the new Honda Accord every year, I guess, right? It's just like, yep, same thing, a little bit different, a little better.
Definitely. Okay. So I got to ask you about some recent controversy in the tech space as it relates to the new iPhones that are coming out.
Okay.
There have been a lot of hardcore tech nerds, Michael, that are upset and pissed that the new iPhones are not coming with a 120 hertz display. And I've been trying to explain to these people for the past month that it doesn't matter. Most average people don't know what it is or what the importance of it is, and that Apple is catering to the mass market and not the hardcore tech nerd. Can you please talk to us a little bit about the importance or maybe lack of importance of a 120Hz display, especially as it relates to iPhone?
I'm of two minds about 120Hz. I think I've heard people go so far as to say that you can't tell the difference, and maybe some people can't. Like, I can't tell the difference between a really awesome $2,000 pair of headphones and a 300 pair of, you know, Bose QC35s, whatever. But I think most people can tell. And I think if you give somebody a 60Hz phone in one hand, a 120Hz phone in the other, they can tell. And I value it in the sense that, like, on the Fold screen, on the Fold 2 display, the primary, when it's that big and you're looking at 120Hz on that screen, or the iPad Pro, you're like, oh, yeah, oh, this is all right. You know, get into it. This is very sexy. I like it. Mm-hmm. But sorry, Russell Holly, I didn't mean to call a piece of tech sexy. You just had a clean thing about this. I just realized that I think he put it in my head. But in the same breath, I think most people, not us tech nerds, will say, yes, I can tell the difference. Do I want to pay more for that, either in extra cost or in battery life, by reducing the battery life? I think most people would say no. It's not a feature that I think most normal folks really care about in a way that's it. You can bundle it with other features in a way to make people care about a big upgrade. But I don't think in and of itself, 120Hz is a giant selling feature to anybody but gaming phone enthusiasts and real hardcore nerds like us.
Right.
So I don't think it's that much of a miss on Apple's part. I think people are, as usual, looking for a reason to be mad at Apple because for whatever reason, you know. I don't prefer to carry an iPhone. I understand. This is why I mostly carry Android phones. I get it, you guys. And I know that Apple can be frightfully pretentious. Maybe that's why they don't invite me to their things, because I just am always yelling at them about just being so inaccessible to anybody who's not that snitty. But they still do a great job on hardware, and the iPhone is still a really great product, and it's going to sell really well without 120Hz, and not just because there's an Apple on the back. It's because people have assigned value to the product, to the ecosystem, and because it's a very good phone. Please, let's just admit the iPhone is a very good phone. Can we, please?
I think
we say you don't prefer something and still acknowledge that it's great. And it's just, let's all try to be a little older than 14.
All right.
That's what I have to say about that.
Speaking of iPhone, Michael, we have to talk about the elephant in the room with iPhones this year. The emergence of 5G, at least in far marketing. I don't know if you had a chance to watch the iPhone keynote this year. The eye roll! Did y'all see the eye roll? Did you see the eye roll? Oh my God!
The eye roll! Passed out from lack of interest. I'm sorry.
Y'all missed the most world famous eye roll I've ever seen in my life. The eye roll. So tell us how you really feel, Michael. Tell us how you really feel about 5G.
Dude, it's just not like it. From a carrier perspective, it's important. From the future of the industry, it is important. It is what the future will be built on. It's crucial. From a consumer perspective, right now, no, there's no reason to get excited about 5G. You're either going to get millimeter wave, which is you're going to have to stand, make sure there's no trees between you and that cell site. And if you lose sight of that node, you're not going to have it anymore. But if you're in that shadow, it's going to be real fast. Or you're going to get low band and mid band 5G, which is, you know, 20% faster than 4G. Is that an improvement? Yes, it is. And sorry, that was for low band. Mid band, there are some more advantages there. But there are so many qualifiers. There are so many things where you have to say, like, yeah, good if this, great if this, not so great if all these things. Like, it is an important and necessary evolution in tech. It is not something that deserves the level of hype that every freaking company is trying to drum up for it. And I get really tired of seeing artificial hype created around it, because it's not worth your extra money. And the minute you fire it up, you see it. It's not worth your extra money unless you're sitting there right under a millimeter wave node. Cool.
I mean, I don't know if I can say anything else. I mean, I think Michael just nailed it. I've told you guys all year, don't buy a phone this year just for 5G, because you're gonna be sadly mistaken. But it's nice. Like, it's definitely the future, but it's not the right now.
It's going to help them with capacity. It's going to help them with rollouts. And in the future, when it is actually properly deployed and fully integrated, you're going to see things that would never be possible over LTE. Mm-hmm. But in our current world, you know, the things we can imagine, the thing most people are using their phones for, what are we doing right now, Viber? We're having a live video call at pretty okay resolution, I think. I'm doing it over 4G LTE.
Yep.
It's fine.
Yeah.
That's what I think about 5G.
Now, obviously, like we said, 5G is kind of overhyped right now, but I do think that it might help people that don't get very good 4G get better 4G in the future because of the expansion of the network and like you were talking about only the capacity and things like that. So if you didn't get good 4G before, the introduction of 5G might help you get better 4G, but yeah, still not there.
Yeah, that's the bummer. You know, I think it's a messaging failure. And I feel like I'm doing a little bit of too much off the cuff criticizing here. Cause again, it's not an easy thing to explain 5G, God knows. And it's not an easy thing to get people excited about stuff. Cause that's a lot of people's jobs. But I think if you respect people's intelligence enough and you tell them like 5G is the future and you don't even understand how it's going to change things, but it will, there's a way to do that rather than the obvious direct route of 5G is here now and it's amazing. And it's just like, you know, people with their heads are exploding because they're full of purple magenta, like T-Mobile, you know, electricity and Verizon, the 5G built right. It's like, is it though? Are you sure? Cause that's not my experience. And it's deployed. It's out and you can buy it and you can spend money on it. And then you're like, oh, I rounded a corner and then I lost it. Come on, come on, come on, come on. I find it troublesome, problematic.
I think me personally, call me when I can have 5G inside of a building. Thank you very much. I'm just like
that too. Yeah, absolutely. I've used some 5G laptops that are pretty handy because you're in one spot. You can sit at a coffee shop outside and there is a node up there and you're like, oh wow, this is crazy. I can work all day on this. That's great. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a valuable product, excuse me. It's just going to take a long time to get where it needs to be.
Shout out to LeBaron for the 499. He said the iPhone is a good, really good phone with no charger block. Tweeter favorite. Oh, I think we're beating that subject over like a dead horse about the no charging brick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah. We're not going there anymore. Yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah, it is.
But I do got beef with you, Mr. Michael Fisher. I got beef with you. Recently, me and you, I didn't know it at the time, but me and you were actually in the same video as part of a big old collab via Android Central.
The headphone video.
So we get to the end of the video, and I think the question is, have you ever brought a pair of headphones because of how they look? And I was like, absolutely, because I brought the Black Serpent headphones too because of how they look. And at the very end of the video, Michael Fisher goes, absolutely. That's why I've never brought a pair of AirPods. What is with you and AirPods? Your hatred. What is going on? Explain yourself. Oh my goodness. Explain yourself, Mr. Fisher. What is with the hatred for AirPods?
You know, man, it is a mixture of that. You're right to call me out on it. It's a mixture of that inherent contrarian that lives within me that just the minute I see every third person with the same product on the sidewalk, I'm like, be yourself. Why don't you? You know, of course, I carry a Peak Design backpack, the same thing as every other tech reviewer. So, you know, I understand. I thought the first AirPods were an engineering genius, but also, oh, so ugly. I think they're heinous. So when they came out with AirPods Pro, I was very impressed. And I think they actually look pretty good. So it must just be that too many people have them. You know, I love those Earin M2s, man. I like originality in tech. I do. I like rare products. I'm not a, you know, hipster or whatever. I just like new things. Earin made those M2s that I adored, and no one else I've ever seen has them. Samsung with the Galaxy Beans, or Buds Live, as they like to call them. They're not my favorite buds at all. Because I like ones that seal, but I love the way the beans look. I love that they took a chance and made a different form factor there. And the case is a little different, like different for the sake of different is not great. There's a lot of bad earbuds out there, just because they were different. But, no, I mean, I think it's a quest for originality, to be honest.
I had to get you, man. I had to get you. The way you answered the question in the video, just all bougie, like, yeah, that's why I never got a pair of AirPods.
I'm such a bad like teammate. I haven't watched that cut, and Hayato did a great job on it from what everyone tells me. But I don't know. It's October. I haven't made time for much. So I look forward to watching that. I will say this though. Speaking of Daniel Rubino, he was the one who interviewed me about that, and I am going to hide behind interviewer bias because he and I were talking off mic about that, and we were, I think, both just hating on the AirPods together. So I think he affected my answers.
So before we get you out of here, Michael, before we get you out of here, everybody that watches me know that I have named my Galaxy Fold. I actually gave it a name. It's so good. I call it Bruce Wayne. So somebody in the chat asked earlier, did you give your Fold to a name, Michael? They want to know.
Yeah, I did. It's not as fun. And I mean, your name is dope. My name will not make any sense to anybody but the most crazy Star Trek fan. But in Star Trek, of course, they had iPads before iPads were a thing in the 80s. And they called them pads, P-A-D-D. Personal mm-hmm. access display device. So my pad is my Fold is called Mr. Pad, MR PADD, and my Razer is of course called Mr. Communicator, and my Galaxy Z Flip is called Mr. Tricorder. I am consistent, if predictable.
Mm-hmm. So your Fold is called Mr. Pad. Okay, all right.
Mr. Pad. Also, do with that what you will. P-A-double-D. You know, it's a 2Ds. It's a special thing. It's not.
Hey, just you can't blame the man. The man is a Trekkie. He's a tried and true Trekkie. I mean, that's what he does, man. That's what he does.
Cannot tell a lie.
No doubt. But Michael Fisher, awesome conversation. Thank you for coming back to the podcast, man. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you for having me, man, and thank you for all the delays. I'm gonna have to put a kibosh on most pod appearances through probably the end of the year on account of, you know how it is. We're underwater right now. I got to get back to work at some point. So I will see you in the new year, but I look forward to seeing what other crazy folks you have on each and every show.
Definitely, man. I appreciate the time. So thank you. Shout out to those of y'all who listen on audio only this week. Thank you for listening to another episode of Vibe Drive with me and my man, Michael Fisher. If you want to go check out his content, his information will be in the show notes. Definitely check him out. He is legit. Also, if you want to support the podcast or donate, there should be a Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes. Not required, but anything that you're willing to contribute, greatly, greatly appreciated. Excuse me. However, if you happen to be listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving a rating or review so we can get this podcast in the top 200 of tech podcasts. That will definitely help me out a lot. So again, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave that rating or review. And thank you for listening to another episode of Vibe Drive. Until the next time, people, this your boy Viper, the man about tech. You know where to find me. So come back for more.